before you read any of the influencer reactions to the war.
Everyone's saying, hey, look what your boy did, look what you voted for. I voted for none of this. No, chat, I didn't vote for any of this. Who'd have thought that the president could just lie? This is Jet. All you guys saying that I wanted this, I wanted none of this. All you guys saying I wanted this, I wanted none of this.
The U.S. says that Iran was intent on developing a nuclear weapon, which is probably the case given Trump pulled out of the Iran deal. Yeah, but didn't we do that last time and we blew him up? Why didn't we just regime change him last time? And why are we regime changing him this time?
Nah, man. Now we're going to war with Iran? Nah, man. I didn't vote for none of this. Everyone's saying, hey, look what your boy did.
I actually have significantly less of a problem with, fuck, was there another person here? Well, oh, I don't know. Was Aiden Ross on this? With, like, XQC and Aiden Ross, because I feel like the streamer culture is a bit different and that people just kind of look at him as dumb. Like, I think they shouldn't have done this, I guess, like their Trump event. But the damage that the comedian podcasters have done in this world where it feels like they've convinced their audiences that these are, like, the new truth sayers of the Republic. I don't know if we'll ever recover. Like, I think people legitimately think, at least for the Joe Rogan people, and it feels like for the Andrew Schultz guy as well, and the Theo Vons, are like, oh no, these are our brave centrist people with no filter coming out and telling us like what's real and true. I don't know. It just seems super fucking, I don't know if we ever recover.
Now is the foreign minister of Oman, Badr al-Busaidi, who is the mediator negotiating.
Oman, shout out. They do exist.
A nuclear deal between the United States and Iran. President Trump said Friday he's not happy with the way talks are going and not happy that they're not willing to give us what we have to have. From your point of view, is diplomacy failing?
I am confident and in my assessment of the way the talks are going. I think there is.
I kind of feel like I'm getting radicalized against Israel. Like, I kind of feel like they deserve anything bad that happens to them at this point. Good one. The issue is, remember what I said before, okay? If you're on that pro-Pali, the crazy retarded Western shit, then the idea is that Israel is constantly and always invading people and taking shit over to be evil or whatever, blah, 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 right? Or that they'll do anything they can to do any shit like this, right? That's not quite true. However, something that is true and has been true is that Israel will always seize an opportunity to do shit. And the problem is that Donald Trump is an almost infinite opportunity for Israel to do shit. So they will do as much shit as they can do as long as Donald Trump is president. And so that is what you are seeing right now, unfortunately. And because our president has literally no concept, backbone, anything with regards to the Middle East, and he sees probably an easy victory in terms of like bombing Iran, and he really wants to make a name for himself.
Yes, really, I can see that the peace deal is within our reach.
A peace deal?
Yes, is within our reach if we just allow diplomacy the space it needs to get there. Because I don't think any alternative to diplomacy is going to solve this problem.
When you say space, does that mean you are asking for more time to continue negotiations?
I'm asking to continue this process because we have already achieved quite a substantial progress in the direction of a deal. And the heart of this deal is very important, and I think we have captured that heart.
When you say the heart of the deal, Iran has said
they were ramping up nuclear activity in Iran. IAEA said this 2 days before our attack. Okay, so what have we been doing since we bombed their nuclear facilities last time? What was the... I mean, like, we knew... I mean, what do we expect, right? Like...
This has to be nuclear only. What have you actually agreed upon? Can you give us any sense of why there should be more time?
Because if the ultimate objective is to ensure forever that Iran cannot have a nuclear bomb, I think we have cracked that problem through these negotiations by agreeing a very important breakthrough that has never been achieved any time before. And I think if we can capture that and build on it, I think a deal is within our reach.
What has Iran agreed to you that they have never done before? Can you give us any sense?
The single most important achievement, I believe, is the agreement that Iran will never ever have a nuclear material that will create a bomb. This is, I think, a big achievement. This is something that is not in the old deal that was negotiated during President Obama's time. This is something completely new. It really makes the enrichment argument less relevant because now we are talking about zero stockpiling. And that is very, very important because if you cannot stockpile material that is enriched, then there is no way you can actually create them, whether you are rich or not rich. And I think this is really something that has been missed a lot by the media. And I want to clarify that from the standpoint of a mediator.
So explain that. So the enriched material, the things that could be used as nuclear fuel for a bomb, you're saying Iran would not keep on their own soil?
They would give it up.
They would give it up?
They will not be able to actually...
Real quick, the Obama nuclear deal, was that a good deal or no? I think it was. I thought it was a good framework. Some people claim that there were not enough inspections or something, but everything I looked up, it seems like for the most part, that was a good, for the most part, it was a good meme, but...
They accumulate that material that will enable them to create a bomb. There's no accumulation. So there will be zero accumulation, zero stockpiling, and full verification. That is also equally important achievement, I think. A full and comprehensive...
The weird thing is the online reception is more that it's Iraq 2.0 and not Libya or Kosovo. I don't know what the comparisons are, what you mean by the comparison there. Or not, I'm not sure.
Verification by the IAEA, which is the agency in charge of this file.
The UN nuclear watchdog. Yes. So you're saying all enriched material would be shipped someplace else, not Russia, but...
No, the current stockpiles that still exist.
The things that are still in Iran.
I think that there is agreement now that this will be downblended to the...
The only complaints were that they didn't consult Israel or Saudi Arabia during the process. It's because everybody in our current administration is a fucking retard because they're children and they have no concept of how to actually operate as adults in the world, right? So they probably think that, like, attacking a country is like we make the decision and we blow them up and that's cool. As opposed to putting probably everybody in the region on notice, ensuring that everybody's going to be okay through whatever the future conflict is, ensuring that we're going to be there to support if they get counterattacked or if ABCDEFG happens or if there are counterintelligence or insurgents or whatever in your country that might, like, there's probably my guess is, now I've never ran a war before, but my guess is when you're actually doing these types of attacks in a region, there's probably a whole checklist of things that you run down to make sure that everything is going to turn out okay. And it wouldn't be surprising to me if the current administration literally ran through zero things and they were just like, oh shit, we're gonna bomb and torpedo people because it's fucking based
lowest level possible,
okay,
to neutral level, a natural level, which means
that Lonerbox told me the deal was bad. I don't know who to believe. Well, Lonerbox has far too curly hair and is Scottish, so who are you gonna believe? I don't think it was like a good quote-unquote final deal, but I think that it represented something for a country that we had nothing with and we had been enemies with since Bush decided to throw them on the axis of evil. So I think it was a good step towards some kind of normalized relations, and it was better than nothing. But I mean, ideally, the joint JCPOA, joint cause plan of action, joint something plan of action. It was a good joint coalition plan of action. It was something, but it was a good first step, and hopefully would have continued to move in that direction. Joint comprehensive line of action.
And convert it into fuel, and that fuel will be irreversible.
That would be significant.
It is very significant. It is very significant, and I think we have agreement on that, in my view.
In your view.
Yes.
Because today...
What about accusations that Iran was violating the JCPOA? I was talking to someone who was like, well, any deal with Iran, obviously because they were lying. Anybody who just says people just lie without anything else is retarded. They're acting like these are like children. Also, having a deal and having somebody violate it is good. It gives you moral and legal authority to act. That's a good thing. You want that. You want that basis to go in and do something, right? Imagine you have an agreement with somebody and you're like, oh, they're probably going to violate this agreement anyway, so fuck them. I'm just going to go fuck their shit up. And then you go to fuck their shit up, but when other people are looking at you, they're like, well, what's going on? I fucked their shit up. Why, bro? Well, because I knew they were going to fuck around. Did they even agree not to fuck around? Well, no, but they probably wouldn't have. They would have lied anyway. Oh, well, sounds like you should have got that agreement first so that I could actually see that you had an agreement that they were going to fuck around, and then they did fuck, or that they weren't going to fuck around, then they did fuck around, and now you have more moral and legal authority to go after people. You can build a coalition easier. You can do stuff easier.
We have confirmed a confidential report from the IAEA says inspectors report seeing Iran conducting regular activity at bombed uranium enrichment sites, but Iran has refused to tell us what has happened to their stockpile. They have refused to allow UN inspectors in to look at it. Are you telling me that inspectors would be given access to these sites, like at Isfahan?
If there's a deal, an agreed deal, they would be full access.
Iran has offered that.
Yes.
So who would these inspectors be? It would be UN, IAEA?
IAEA. But I think, you know, there is room also if there is a deal in place. I am quite confident, from my point of view, that even United States inspectors will have access at some point in the process if we have a deal that is respected and fair and endurable. I see no reason why there is no access to be given even to the United States itself.
Iran has never allowed American weapons inspectors on their soil. They wouldn't let President Obama do that. You think Iran would let President Trump send American inspectors into Iran?
This is why I think this is a much, much better deal, because I think Iran is open to the idea in a way that never had been the case in the past.
You met with Vice President J.D. Vance. Does he understand the details like you have laid out here? What did he say?
I have explained to Vice President.
Some of my friends are getting into this predictive history, dude, but he seems like a mega retard. Is he actually a Chinese operative? Stop. You're already wearing me down. It's not a bad question. This is the answer, okay? The answer is that the average citizen of any... Wait, hello? Oh, this thing was... The average citizen of any country, okay, is not going to be able to do all the necessary research to understand a lot of what's going on in the media today, because stuff is just very complicated right now. Okay? There's a lot of stuff going on. The job is of the media, mainstream or alternative, to break things down for ordinary citizens so that they can have like a bite-sized takeaway from things that are going on. But the media has just everything is just fucked now, has just completely abandoned its role. I kind of expected with Hassan, I guess, because at least he's a big streamer or he's got like his little talent rep, you know, shoving him onto different platforms. But like, I guess just nobody does any research or homework on anything in terms of who they platform or whatever. They have no fucking idea. Or
so this is the key question. Why do they do this? I think there are three possibilities. Okay. And I think all three possibilities are valid. The first is the idea of hubris. If you look at history, this is how empires behave.
Like, if you watch this guy's channel, this guy is the ultimate vibe lord. Like, he has very little knowledge, historical background, economic understanding of anything. He's just a vibe lord. He just kind of like rambles a bunch of shit, and people think that this guy's like a real professor or is like super educated. I think he's got over a million subs on his YouTube channel at this point, because I think, was it Joe Rogan or somebody else was platforming his videos? And it's just like, this guy's just like a king, like a fucking king retard. So you go have him on for hours. The U.S.-Iran war. This is the guy who said that we can't win because there are mountains. The U.S. is going to lose because of mountains. Damn. Dude, this guy's videos do crazy. Crazy views. How power works. Let's do 15 minutes. Everything this guy says is
good morning,
just...
class. Welcome to our first class. And
there's like four students sitting in this class. It's not even like a real, it's not even like a, I don't even think this is, I don't even know what he's teaching. If it's like an English lesson or whatever, and he just does like.
Today, what I want to do is provide the framework for how we will learn the semester. What are we learning? How are we learning? Why are we learning? All right. So
you try to debate him? It would be a horrible conversation. It's
why do we do this? Because it's a lot easier than giving gold to other people. And so this system would facilitate trade throughout the world.
Oh God, he's doing power. Do you think he's gonna do petrodollar?
Doesn't make sense. Now I'm the bank. I have all this gold, and I want to make money with it. So I want to give it to other people. So other merchants will come to me and say, listen, I need gold. Can you lend me out gold? Right? But I say to him, yeah, but I give you out the gold. You have a security issue. It's inconvenient for you. So why don't I give you a receipt, a contract instead? Does that make sense?
It's getting harder and harder to listen to political commentary these days just because it feels like there's basic checks on shit. Like, I like Hutch, but he was talking to fucking Lycan and Strader, like they're serious people. The problem is there's like a lack of fundamental knowledge. Like, I don't know, I would call it like high school knowledge. Like, people just don't have like just very basic.
Makes sense. Because all I need is a contract, all I need is a receipt in order to go and do trade elsewhere. Right? So by doing this, what I've done is I've doubled the gold in my bank. Right? I've created money out of nothing. So the gold is still 5 million. That hasn't changed, but the receipt is now 5 million plus 5 million. So theoretically, I now have 10 million in the bank. All right? So that's how money and finance works.
Wow.
Now, there's a problem with the system. What's the problem with the system?
Infinite money.
Okay, that's a good question, okay? Why is it that people believe in me? Okay, the answer is very simple. The answer is because for most of human history, people didn't need money. If you were just a normal person, what are you doing? Were you in a village growing crops? If you wanted to like get new stuff, what would you do? You would trade with someone else, right? Maybe you have a goat that I want. Well, then I would trade you a cow for it. So we didn't actually need money.
Is this, I don't know the actual answer to this. my vibe thing would be that money is probably quite old in human history, just because I feel like bartering is very, very difficult in terms of equivalent exchange. Like, let's say that I'm a farmer and I raise cows. I probably don't need to buy 1,000 shirts, but I'm never trading a one cow for one shirt. I thought this is why mediums of exchange were created, because it's very, very hard, depending on the type of thing that you're dealing with, to make any kind of like fair or equivalent exchange, you know?
So for most of human history, no one had any need for money. It was only in certain circumstances that you would want money. So for example, marriage, right? Okay? So throughout most of human history, money represented debt that could be unpaid. Oh, sorry, debt that could never be repaid. So for example, a very common thing is, maybe you and I fight, and I kill you. Well, in theory, your family should not come and kill me. But obviously, that would create a lot of problems, right? So the way to settle the dispute is, I would give your family money. Because money was symbolically meant to say, I'm sorry, I killed you. This is a debt that can never be repaid. Okay. That's what money was used for in most circumstances throughout human history. There was no actually real use for money. It was symbolic. But with the rise of trade, with merchants, they needed money.
Why would you give money to a family if it didn't do anything? But that's like represents, I'm sorry. I just picked a random video. You can watch any of these videos. All of it is like just garbage. It's just like a guy having, I don't want to be mean, but it's like a guy having like a midlife crisis who is just like became like a super famous quote unquote professor who just, it's all just like, he just vibes out on everything. That's it. This
in order to facilitate.
Is this guy an MMTer? No. This guy won't even know what that means. It's just all like fantasy. He's like winging it on every lecture, you know?
That's right. But these merchants all knew each other, so they trusted each other anyway. So money was a mechanism for them to trade easier, okay? Does that make sense? All right? Okay, so let's go back to the question. This system looks great. I can print money out of nothing, but there's a problem with this system. What is the problem? There's a problem here. Hmm?
Forge receipts.
Okay, that's actually a great question, okay? So, yeah, is it possible to forge the contract? Okay? So, that's a really good point. The problem is, the answer is that they all knew each other anyway. Okay, also, it's a very small circle. Again, we have not reached the mark.
Also, wait, what? Is this a smart board? Are these things cheaper now? I remember when we were in school, we got our first smart board. It was a big deal. The thing was like fucking $10,000 or some shit.
Period where it's a lot of people using money. If that's the case, then forgery becomes a problem. We'll discuss this in future classes, okay? Counterfeiting. But at this point in history, forgery is actually not a big issue. There's actually a bigger issue. And it's a huge issue. What's the issue?
They're not the standard in schools? Oh, well, fuck.
$5 million of gold, right?
Okay.
There's about $10 million of gold out there.
Okay.
In receipts.
Okay.
What's the problem with that?
Free money. Infinite money.
The problem is that if everyone wants to gold at the same time...
Oh, gold rush.
I go bankrupt, right?
Oh, no.
Because I lose my reputation. The contract says that at any time you want the gold, I must give it to you.
Okay.
But if I have, like, if there's $100 million in gold contracts, but I only have $10 million...
Okay.
In gold, only if 15 million wants the gold back, then I'm screwed. This is what we call a bank run.
Whoa.
Okay? A bank run. And this is a huge problem for merchants. Okay?
Did fractional reserve lending exist when people were on a gold standard? Is that even a thing? Did merchants do that? Does anybody have any idea? Because a bank run, so in current monetary systems, basically, when you lend money to somebody, you create like an asset and a liability is created to represent an exchange of money and all this. But you don't have to actually keep the physical reserve in your bank that you've lent out to other people. So let's say I lend $1,000 to somebody and I have $100 in the bank or whatever. Like I can write a note saying that in the United States, is it 10% you have to keep on hand or whatever of like the total money lent out? Like you gain an asset of $1,000 in your bank. They have like a liability of $1,000 on their thing so that everything is a wash at the end of the day. But there's overall, you've lent out, quote unquote, more money than you actually have kept in your reserves. And what happens is if every single person were to come to the bank to make a withdrawal, people that have deposited money for a savings account or whatever, if all of them try to withdraw the money that they have in the bank, because the bank isn't required to keep on hand, I guess, like they only have to have a percentage of all the total money loaned or whatever, you can run into a situation where people are trying to make withdrawals for money that's not there, and then people freak the fuck out, and then everything gets like really fucked. This is why FDIC insurance exists now. Federal Depository Insurance, something? What does FDIC stand for? And it guarantees you up to Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Okay. It guarantees you up to, is it $250,000 now or is it still, is it $100,000? I don't remember. So that it's less likely that people go to a bank to withdraw money. I don't know if this existed. If you could have a bank run though, when people were still trading gold and shit. I don't even know if these merchants were considered banks. I have no idea.
There's also another problem.
There is no legal reserve requirements in the U.S. currently. Zero legal reserve requirements? Really?
The system. And the problem is this. Who do I usually lend my money to? You guys know? If I'm a bank, if I'm a merchant, who do I usually lend my money to? Okay, guys. Today we lend the money to entrepreneurs. But back then, there really weren't entrepreneurs. There were kings.
Yes, it changed during COVID. Okay.
And noble people. And what did they do all the time? Why did they need money? To fight wars. Okay? That's why there's a demand for gold. Because if I'm a king, I need to fight a war.
Usually, that's true. For the Great Depression, they were still on the gold standard.
It's my brother or someone else to control this territory. Right? Now, the problem with this is I could get killed, in which case, oops. But also, what's much more common is the king would be like, screw you, bank. I don't need to pay you back. Okay? So there's actually a lot of risk with this system. So over time, develop a system to mitigate or reduce this risk. Okay? What would they do? What they would do is they would create cartels. Cartels are just partnerships. So maybe this bank works with another bank, throughout Europe. And the way they establish these cartels is usually through intermarriage, right? They would marry each other, they would combine together. And that way, let's say 15 million of receipts wants back the gold, but there's only 10 million. Well, guess what? You just go to another bank. Okay? And let's just say a king decides, I'm not gonna. That's kind of strange.
Money just used for trade, they still have limited resources in the actual need.
You see what's happening is this. You all believe money is scarce, okay? I just spent the past 10, 20 minutes explaining to you, it's not scarce, it's infinite. Because it's just a number. We can at any time print out as much money as we need.
True.
Okay? So that's how power works. Power has brainwashed you into thinking something that is not true. You've been taught from the first day that money is scarce. But it's not scarce, it's infinite.
Oh shit.
And no matter what I say to you, you still believe this, okay? So you have to get that out of your head. Money is not scarce, it is infinite. So let's wrap up the question. Why is there poverty in this world? Why do people starve? Why is there inequality in this world?
Oh shit.
Why are there poor people? Why are there rich people? What's the answer?
Preaching now.
Listen, bitch.
Because they don't print infinite money.
Okay. Because it's scarce. Okay, so guys, this is amazing, okay? You guys can't get it out of your head. You think money is scarce. You think it is not possible to print infinite money when I already told you it is possible to print infinite money because they do this all the time, yeah?
The one who has the power don't want everyone to share the same...
because we don't want people to all have money. The powerful people don't want that. That's exactly the answer. And why? Because... otherwise, no one would work. Do you understand? The point of putting money is not to give you money. The point of putting money is to create the illusion that money is valuable and therefore you work hard in order to obtain it. But in order for me to make you want to get money, I need to create artificial misery.
Oh, I feel like I heard about this in 1984.
Right?
Oh my God.
If there were poor people, you wouldn't want to be rich. It's only because you see people suffer that you would want to go make money for yourself.
Oh, shit.
What do your parents tell you? Your parents tell you, work hard in school, make a lot of money. Otherwise, you're going to end up like a poor person. Right? Well, guess what? If there are no poor people, your parents couldn't say that to you. And you wouldn't want to work hard in school.
The problem is that the entire setup, from his demeanor to the entire vibe of someone that sounds like they have access to esoteric knowledge, breaking down very complex contemporary issues, to the prevalence of anti-establishment adjacent narratives, disarms the average person from the onset. This is literally intellectual baiting, and people are just too retarded / disinterested about anything to care. Yeah, like, as long as you have stuff that, like, lightly kind of fits together, people are, I don't know how to explain it. I keep going back to the English essay bullshitting thing. So you can just say a bunch of stuff without making any actual strong claims. But as long as like the narrative seems like it's in, like the syntax fits and the grammar is right, it feels like you're spitting. But technically this is where, like, I don't think I would, maybe, I don't know, for this guy, would I expect the average person to be able to listen to this kind of thing? Like, I don't know. It seems like kind of bullshit. Maybe, maybe not. But I would expect the average person in media to know that, like, oh, this guy is kind of just like a random fucking retard. But I guess apparently...
My 30s.
Apparently not. Wait, what is this? Somebody linked. Wait, where can somebody link me his Breaking Points interview? Ugh.
Late 20s, early 30s, I became really depressed. And honestly, I thought about killing myself, and I was playing video games every single day. Jesus. I just hid in my parents' basement. And so I was traumatized by Yale. It took me a long time to get over the trauma and recognize this is a false system. Okay? Yale traumatized me, and I need to relearn to be open-minded, to embrace failure, to be resilient, to embrace learning. Okay? And that's why I'm a teacher today, to teach you guys that to be successful in life, this is the formula. Okay? You don't need Harvard, Yale, and Princeton.
True. Fuck those schools. That's why I went to UNO, baby. Okay, wait, we're getting sidetracked. Do we care anything more? Oman's not even a real country. We don't care about this guy.
All right, guys, we've got yet another heavy hitter guest and first-time guest on the show, Professor Zhang. He is the star of the popular YouTube channel Predictive History. He uses game theory to analyze past, current, and to predict future geopolitical events. And he joins us now, Professor.
Also, there are a few I can give you very lightly, okay? There are a few heuristic things that you can listen for, and you know the person's probably full of shit. So anytime somebody talking philosophy brings up anything related to quantum mechanics, it's almost always going to be bullshit, okay? So careful, don't internalize any of that stuff. Or they talk about Gödel's incompleteness theorem, okay? I think there are three of them, okay? But a lot of the time, it's going to be some bullshit. Anytime somebody brings up, like, game theory, and they're making, like, hardcore, like... Game theory is an incredibly complex branch of mathematics. If this person has like no background in anything related to this, but they say like they do a ton of analysis related to it, I would always just say this is like a prime for pseudo-intellectual territory, okay? It's ripe, fertile ground, all right?
All right, guys, we've got yet another heavy hitter guest and first-time guest on the show, Professor Zhang. He is the star of the popular YouTube channel Predictive History. He uses game theory to analyze past, current, and to predict future geopolitical events. And he joins us now. Professor, great to have you.
Good to see you, sir.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, for people who aren't familiar with your work, I wanted to show folks that back in 2024, you made three big predictions. One, that Trump would win. Two, that he would start a war with Iran. And three, that the U.S. would lose that war. Let's take a listen to that.
In this class, this semester, I'm making three big predictions, right? First is that Trump will win in November.
Wow.
Second is that the United States will go to war.
This is the guy who said there's no strong evidence for the Holocaust, right? Yeah, but that's not even, I don't even know if that's the craziest thing he said.
War against Iran. And the third big prediction is that the United States will lose this war, which will forever change the global order.
So obviously that last one is the only one that has not yet come to fruition is quite a stunning prediction. You know, do you stand by it? And what have you seen so far that leads you to sort of stand firm in that conclusion?
So given my analysis of how the war is progressing, I think that Iran has many more advantages over the United States.
Now, when we watched that video... Unironically, a huge factor for him was saying that the mountains in the West means that we can never win a war with that country. I'm not even exaggerating or joking, okay? Unironically, all right?
The reality is that right now...
Also, I don't know how we could even lose to Iran when I feel like if we stopped right now, didn't we kill like 37 of their fucking top leaders and everything? I don't even know what a loss looks like right now.
It's a war of attrition between the United States and Iran. And the Iranians have been preparing 20 years.
Like, I'm so sorry. Iranians have been fucking sanctioned for 20 fucking years. What do you mean? Iran is going to win a war of attrition against the West? Sorry. Okay.
For this conflict. In their eschatology, in their religion, this is a war against the great Satan. They've had many practice runs. Last June was a 12-day war when the Iranians were able to examine, analyze the strike capacities of both the Israelis and the Americans.
And yeah, the analysis was they can fuck us up the ass as deeply as they want, whenever they want. That was the analysis. What did they change in a few months? What? When is your talk with Hutch? I think he said we'd chat at 3 or 4 today, so in an hour or two.
And they've had a lot of time, 8 months, to prepare fully for this new attack. They, through the proxies, the Houthis, Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Shia militias, have been able to... And they've had a lot of time, 8 months, to prepare fully for...
God damn, wait, has it really been... Has it been 8 months since we bombed Iran? There's no way, right?
Oh, yeah, it's been a while.
Oh, man. Bro, it's been a long year or something.
Well, this has been like the slowest year of my life. It's fucking nuts.
Damn.
I saw somebody on the subreddit, they were talking about like, oh, the years go by so quickly. I don't know how they're feeling that with this year. This year has been nuts.
Jesus.
This new attack.
I should be streaming at Discord.
Mm-hmm. They, through their proxies, the Houthis, Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Shia militias, have been able to really grasp the American mentality.
The Houthis, Hezbollah, and Hamas. So Hezbollah, is Hezbollah that functional
anymore?
They're
the pager people.
Thank you. True. They are. Yes.
You're welcome.
They are. Okay. Thank you. That's right. Good job. You know what? A plus. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Hezbollah, are they even functional anymore? The fact that Assad is gone leads me to believe that Hezbollah's capabilities have been severely fucking fucked. I don't know how functional, and Nasrallah is dead as well, so I don't know how functional Hezbollah is anymore. Hamas is, I don't know what the fuck even exists from Hamas anymore. And the Houthis, for all of whatever the fuck anybody says about anything, when the West wants to fearmonger that the Yemen Houthis are going to take over whatever the fuck, and as much as the pro-Palestinian retards say the Houthis are just trying to stop the genocide, I'm pretty sure, unless something has changed significantly in Yemen over the past couple years, the al-Houthi family and the all that shit is domestic Yemen politics. The only reason at all that they said shit all about anything going on in Gaza is because Iran was helping them out a little bit in exchange for kind of pushing them to take like an international position on this. But Yemen is a lot of fucking people. And they have a lot of internal fighting that they've done for basically the entirety of the last fucking century. This is not a country that wants to be involved in international affairs. You know, that, like, they might do a little bit of shit to get on Iran's good side for support from Iran, but I don't think that what was the name of the political party? They don't call themselves from the Houthi family anymore. Hassan says this all the time because he wants to sound cool. But I don't foresee them having a huge presence in any kind of like big international conflict. I don't know. I haven't followed the situation over the past year or two, so maybe, but...
And now they have a pretty good strategy of how to weaken and ultimately destroy the American empire. So what the Iranians are doing is they're waging war against the entire global economy. And so they're striking the GCC countries. And not only are they striking GCC countries, American bases, they're going after the critical energy infrastructure of these bases. They blocked off the Strait of Hormuz. And eventually... they will go after the water desalination plants, which is the lifeblood of these nations because they don't have fresh water supply. In fact, the water desalination plants provide 60% of the GCC's water supply. So if a drone, and you know these drones cost $50,000, if they wiped out a desalination plant in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and it's a city of 10 million people, right? They'd be out of water in 2 weeks. And right now, the Iranians have de facto closed off the Strait of Hormuz, and the GCC gets 90% of its food from the Strait of Hormuz. So I know a lot of people are talking about...
Does he think that the Iranians can just outlast the Americans, or does he think that they can beat them? Like,
I truly have no fucking idea. But also, like, Iran wants to shoot at... Iran wants to shoot at the Gulf states and everything constantly. Like, they always do this when they're getting fucked. I think it was a few years ago... I think it was actually under Trump term one was the first time that they actually did a direct attack against Saudi oil refineries. It was kind of a big deal. And then the whole, can somebody come remember? I think the Limpet mine thing in the, I forget what that strait is called. It's like the Strait of Hormuz, but there's like a longer name for the whole thing. But they were putting mines in there too that I think hit a few Japanese ships. But obviously you're going to be attacking oil and shit, whatever, from countries around you because that's like the shit to go for.
the disruptions to the global economy. But right now,
it's a whole thing called the Persian Gulf, maybe.
Oh, the Iranians are actually threatening the very existence of Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, Qatar. And what this is important is that the Gulf states are really the linchpin of the American economy. So what they do is they sell petrodollars and then they recycle the petrodollars back into the American economy through the investments in the stock market.
I'm sorry. Hold on.
Threatening the very existence of Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, Qatar. And what this is important is that the Gulf states are really the linchpin of the American economy. So what they do is they sell petrodollars and then they recycle the petrodollars back in.
I don't know what that means, to sell petrodollars. Metal or somebody can tell me if that makes sense. But so when you're trading so currency shit is complicated because people's currencies can change all the time. So let's say that I'm buying and selling oil on the global market. Okay, I don't know if I want to sell my $100 worth of oil for 55 mutains. Okay, I don't know how long a mutain is going to retain its value. I don't know what the currency exchange is going to be. So instead, when we go to the global market, I instead of me using destains and Mutin using mutains, we're just going to agree that all of our trade is going to be denominated in USD. It's going to be US dollars. We might hold USD. We might trade USD to do the purchase and then trade out of USD or whatever. But we're doing things in denominated USD trade. This is what the petrodollar is. Is I believe the United States has an agreement with all the Gulf states that every trade will be done in a USD denominated trade. That's the petrodollar. But a petrodollar is not a real thing. Like, you can't like buy a petrodollar or sell a petrodollar. That it's just you're just saying that your petroleum or your oil industry is going to be doing trade in USD denominated things. I don't know what he means when he says trade a petrodollar to buy or sell a petrodollar. A lot of people, that's another red herring, or not red herring, that's another red flag. Usually when somebody says petrodollar, you're about to hear the most conspiratorial, retarded shit ever. It's going to be followed by Rothschilds and the IMF and whatever the fuck else, but whatever. And then gold standard.
Weren't they talking about getting off of the dollar recently or whatever?
I think they were saying they wanted to abandon the petrodollar standard as like a denominated thing. I don't remember why or where their talks were on that or not. But
American economy. So what they do is they sell petrodollars and then they recycle the petrodollars back into the American economy through the investments in the stock market. And right now, we know that the entire American economy is propped up by AI investments in data centers. And a lot of that comes from
Jesus Christ,
the Gulf states. So if the Gulf states are no longer able to sell oil and they're no longer able to finance AI, this AI bubble in the United States, then this AI bubble will burst. And with it, will burst as well as the entire American economy, which is really a financial Ponzi scheme.
Right.
So that's a dire situation that the Americans are facing right now.
True.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, sir, an Amazon data center was literally hit in the UAE. And now, of course, big tech companies, which were looking at the UAE as a major potential data center investment hub with cheap and abundant energy, probably going to be rethinking that. We also want to talk to you about munitions. We can put this next one up here on the screen. The United States is racing to accomplish Iran mission before munitions run out. This is specifically around interceptor math. There's a famous video just from yesterday in Israel, which shows a single Iranian ballistic missile, which is being targeted by some 11 different interceptors, all of which miss. Most of those come from the United States, not to mention all of the different bases, the GCC countries that you just talked about, and the ASIM.
Is that true? I thought ballistic missile interception should be... It's a ballistic missile. You shoot it and it has a path.
I don't know about the 11, but I've been reading a lot. There's been a lot of doubts on how many fucking interceptors or whatever some of the countries around
the U.S.
Iran have.
That wouldn't surprise me, because that would be a thing that would require planning in advance, and the United States would have to be ready for that. I'm 100% confident. I don't care what anybody in chat says, Metal Alert or anybody, that we could do it, but it would require forethought and planning. Like, you had to say, oh, we're going to prepare for the next 2 months to be engaged in this type of conflict, so we know we need to create these things ahead of time. But it wouldn't surprise me if the current administration literally just said, we don't give a fuck.
It's seeming like they didn't talk to anybody besides Israel, and they just did this, which is giga fucking retarded. I figured that they would have talked to the EU and had a conversation about, like, hey, what do we do, and what are we going to look like after it's done? You know, like,
yeah, because Donald Trump is what Putin wishes he was. That's what he thinks he is. Like, Putin is like, we can go in and fucking flip this Ukraine shit in 2 weeks. And Trump is like, oh shit, that's some sick shit. We can go in and flip this Venezuela shit in like 2 days or 12 hours. He did. Yeah. But the US actually has the ability to do it. Now Iran is a significantly larger enemy, and I don't know. And there's also more like vulnerable assets, you know, stationed near Iran. I don't even know anything about what this will look like. I don't, like, does Iran's leadership have the capacity or the will to engage in like long-term fights with anything? I don't know what the, I just don't know anything about the government. I truly don't. I have no idea.
It feels like they're just re-rolling. Like they just keep killing them until they find like the leader that they want. And they're just going to keep re-rolling until they got it.
Well, yeah, no, but I'm curious. I don't know what the appetite is among Iran's leadership. Like, I actually don't even really fully understand the Iranian governing structure. Like, they have a president, but I don't believe the president does much. I think it was the supreme leader, the Ayatollah, who has true command over everything, I believe. But, I mean, he's dead, but I don't know what the... I just don't know. I don't know, like, what the next person in line, if they are also on board with that, or if the Iranian people would say, fuck this, or who the military sides with, ultimately, or I just have no idea, yeah.
The United States, not to mention all of the different bases, the GCC countries that you just talked about, and the asymmetry of the cost. It's $1 million for a missile, tens of millions per interceptor in some of these cases. With these munitions running out, how does that change the global picture? So you're in China, obviously, much of the stocks in Asia of the United States are likely to have to be cannibalized if this were to go on. How's that going to affect the global picture here?
Right. So my first point is that the United States military is not designed to fight a 21st century war. Remember, the military-industrial complex came to being after World War II. And it was designed to fight the Cold War. And the Cold War was really about muscle flexing. But
What about the Iraq War? Hello? Do you have an opinion on John Mearsheimer? Yes, every now and then when I really hate the United States and I need some brain-dead analysis to tell me how evil the U.S. is and how realistic everybody else has to act, then I watch Mearsheimer.
About who was able to send people up into space, who was the first to get the person on the moon, who had the more complex missile systems. And so the entire American military strategy revolves around very sophisticated technology that costs a lot of money to build. And that's what the American air defense system is basically. And that's why we're seeing this asymmetry, as you point out, in this war, where you have these million-dollar missiles trying to...
Since he's in China, it explains a lot why he thinks Iran will win. Iran's biggest partner is no longer Russia, but China. Well, I don't think the agenda or anything looks that, it's not that simple. Why do you keep asking me their new court updates? You can see the docket. I don't know why you're, how many times have you put this in chat?
It's also in the pin at the top of the screen.
Well, I know you typed more of this before. I mean, you can look at the docket. There's nothing. I don't know what...
take out these $50,000 drones, and it's not sustainable in the long term. And so what we're seeing is really the puncturing of the aura of invincibility and inevitability that sustained American hegemony for the past 20 years, especially after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And this is really a reordering of not just the global economy, because this signals the collapse of the petrodollar, and with it, the entire U.S. dollar-based reserve currency system, but also... the global hegemony of the United States. We're moving towards a multipolar world.
Professor, this morning, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth...
Anytime you hear somebody talk about moving towards a multipolar world, they always mean the destruction of the United States and Europe also, by the way. Especially the destruction of Europe, but the downfall of the United States is like a secondary thing to that.
Was asked a question about potential ground troops in Iran. He refused to rule out that possibility. And he said, you know, oh, well, we're not going to project to you what we will or will not do, but we don't want to, you know, rule anything out. We will do what it takes. Do you think that America will end up invading Iran from the ground, since it's already becoming relatively clear they won't be able to accomplish the goal of regime change or even regime collapse using just air power alone?
Right. So everyone says that the worst calamity that could happen in the United States is if it were to send ground troops into Iran. At the same time, the United States are committed to regime change in Iran. We've never had a precedent in history where you were able to regime change from the air alone. You need ground troops.
What? Did we have ground troops for Gaddafi in Libya? Pretty sure we got rid of that dude, no?
And so, unfortunately, what's going to happen over the next few months is that pressure will build on America to send ground troops, especially from the GCC countries and from Israel, which are being pounded right now by the Iranians. So remember that if the GCC countries, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, Bahrain, if they go, then the...
There were rebel groups we supported... Oh, sure. Well, there's always a million fucking groups in these. I don't know. Like, again, I don't know the situation for the ground on Iran. I don't know if there are, like, are we looking at a potential group that would even come into governing power? I don't know the domestic situation of Iran right now.
$100 goes with them. So the Americans need to protect.
I know. I'm trying to restart this.
These countries. And these countries are going to demand that either the Americans bribe the Iranians to cease, and this is like $5 trillion in indemnity, okay? Mm-hmm. Or send ground troops to wipe out the Iranian threat once and for all. And I know that there's no political will for ground troops to be used against Iran among the American people. But remember that 78% of American people was against initial strikes against Iran in the first place.
Right. And one of the things that really comes into question, I think, with all of this, sir, when we're looking at the geopolitical picture and the sacrificing in much of this from the United States on behalf of Israel, is kind of a question as to who and what wanted this. We were actually curious for your view on a disputed report here from the Washington Post. We can put it up here on the screen, F3. A push from the Saudis, Israel, helped move Trump to attack Iran. Now, this has been internally disputed by Saudi Arabia, saying that they did not push the Trump administration to attack Iran. However, this is clearly an authorized leak from our own government.
Speaking with some caution here, but remember, all of the Arab or Gulf states that we work with, the leadership is friendly to us. That's why we like the leadership being there. So the Saudi monarchy is going to be friendly to the United States. But remember that the populations themselves are a little bit more ambivalent on the United States and are not very nice towards Israel. So the idea that Saudi Arabia would... The leadership would be pushing the United States, hey, you need to do something about this Iranian shit, okay, fuck this dude up. But publicly, I don't think they would come out and say, oh yes, we love when the US and Israel, our Jewish friends, bomb the fuck out of the Iranians. We love that. I don't think they would ever make that statement publicly. So even though this seems contradictory, I don't think it's necessarily contradictory that privately leadership is going to push for a thing that publicly they represent a different interest of.
Trying to at least lay some of the blame on behalf of the GCC.
Destiny, the Kurds we are supporting. The United States and Israel are seeking to foment an armed uprising inside Iran using a Kurdish fighting force, which has been built up since the 12-day war in 2025. Sources claim that since last year, words have been smuggled into western Iran to arm thousands of Kurdish volunteers. They expect to begin a ground operation within days, with possible air cover by the U.S. and Israeli Air Force. Is that true?
The reason they won't give them their own state is because they need them every few years to go and invade someone.
Sure, maybe. But also, I don't even know where you would make a... Listen, they've got their Kurdistan, okay? In Iraq.
In Iraq, in Iran, in Turkey. Just in they're in the whole area.
I think Iraq is probably the most stable...
area?
Yeah, the Kurdistan regional government or whatever.
DC. What do you make of this analysis and of this narrative that Saudi Arabia was also trying to be behind this push to bomb Iran?
So I've always argued that both Saudi Arabia and Israel are heavily invested in regime change in Iran. Yeah. In fact, Saudi Arabia sees Iran as much more of an existential crisis.
Saudi Arabia definitely want Iran gone to become the Middle East Arabian leader, but the way USA is doing it is definitely not how they want it, because Saudi friends are being absolutely wrecked by Iran's chaos method. Maybe USA can destroy Iran's capability before it gets too bad. Well, yeah, because the US is reckless and insane on every fucking thing they do right now, yeah.
Than Israel. Because remember, Israel still has nuclear weapons, and Israel is a very diverse, very sophisticated economy, whereas Saudi Arabia is completely reliant on oil. And it's always had problems with Iran, because Iran is a theocracy opposed to the Saudi monarchy. Iran funds and equips the Houthis, which have been antagonistic towards Saudi Arabia for the longest time. And right now, the Saudi economy is suffering. It's been trying to pivot towards more of a tourist.
But wouldn't Iran always react like this, even if the U.S. leadership wasn't retarded? Well, I mean, it would depend on what you do. Generally, we wouldn't be going for full-on regime change, so it would be like limited counterstrikes, you know, back. Like what's happened when we bombed their reactors before, and then when we killed, even when we killed Soleimani in 2019 under Trump the first time, it's going to be like limited counterattacks. But now it's obviously it's an all-out war because we've said we're going to kill all your leaders and do regime change, you know?
Economy. That's why they brought in Ronaldo. That's why they're switching to e-gaming.
2020. Okay.
That's why they're building something called a line, Neom. And all.
Why is this schizo pseudo historian being platformed? Because now all you do is, I guess, you just find a person who gives you the talking points you want, and then you platform them with no responsibility or no insight or no research on who your platform or whatever else. That's just it is what it is. It's a fucking our media environment is a fucking joke right now.
These things are not working out. So. They need to be able to control the oil resources of the entire Middle East if they are to survive and thrive as a nation. So I do believe that this reporting is credible, even though it does make Saudi Arabia look bad. But remember, Saudi Arabia says that they wanted peace, but they are helping the Israelis and Americans attack Iran right now because they're allowing the Israelis and Americans to use Saudi airspace.
So help us understand, because it still feels to me like there are some pieces that don't totally add up. You had, in advance of this war on Iran, you had top military brass, up to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, saying, this is a really bad idea.
You need to understand that Trump gets blamed for abandoning the Kurds, but he actually wants to help establish a homeland for them. This is going to be one of his big selling points, Mark Roberts. When does Trump talk about wanting a homeland for the Kurds? Trump, I guarantee fucking to you that Trump has no idea who the Kurdish people even are or what they are. He has no fucking idea whatsoever.
He'd be like, you talking about a cheese curd? Like, what yeah, are we
Trump
talking
has
about
no
here?
Fucking idea.
You had top military brass, up to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, saying, this is a really bad idea. You know, we are not ready for this. You know, all the math on the interceptors that's been talked about for months at this point. And yet Trump still decided to go ahead. What is the calculus that he was making here that led him to take what, you know, already appears to be catastrophic actions?
Right. Okay. So this is the key question. Why did they do this? I think there are three possibilities. Okay. And I think all three possibilities are valid. The first is the idea of hubris. You look at history, this is how empires behave. So the Mindoro kidnapping was quick, successful, and it was adrenaline rush for Trump. And
I do believe this, but this is where like a retard can analyze a retard because Trump is retarded.
Made him overconfident in the capacity of the American military. Mm-hmm. Okay, so hubris is a factor. And we see this throughout history. Why did Hitler invade Stalin? Because he conquered Europe really easily and he thought he was invincible, right? And that led to...
I don't have all the World War II context, but I'm pretty sure there was a genuine fear of like communism spreading as soon as that war ended. Like a lot of people in Europe were hyper fucking fearful of the communist shit after the takeover in Russia and everything. I imagine that was still, I don't know 100% all the reasons why Hitler decided at that point to betray the Soviets or to go back on their agreement, but
the destruction.
I don't know if it was just hubris.
Why did Hitler invade Stalin? Because he conquered Europe really easily and he thought he was invincible.
Maybe it was the math.
Right, and that led to the destruction of the German army in the Soviet Union. So hubris is a factor. Then you have to look at internal political calculus, where even though America does not benefit from this war against Iran, Trump himself personally benefits. Why? Because the Saudis and the Israelis are bribing him to attack Iran. Remember that the Saudis invested $2 billion in the private equity fund of Jared Kushner, who is the son-in-law of Donald Trump, and the Israelis, through Miriam Adelson, have been financing Trump's political career, right? So Miriam Adelson, a few months back, said that she will put up $250 million if Trump were to run a third term. So Trump is getting a lot of financial and political support from the Saudis and Israelis. Also, remember that if this war goes sideways, and
all three of these things are kind of true,
Trump is forced to use ground troops, he will probably get approval from Congress.
I don't know about that one. Maybe I don't know where Congress is at on this.
I think
right
the
now.
Dems vote no. Doesn't seem like they're happy at all about it.
But also, when we say ground troops, are we talking about like limited stuff, or are we talking about like a full on like Iraqi style invasion? I don't know about that.
And this will give him emergency war powers, which will allow him to influence the midterms. So Trump is thinking about a third term, and I think at the black box he probably won't get it. But if there's a war going on, and you can delay elections. And you have emergency war powers, and people.
I don't think we've ever done that historically in the United States, and I don't think that would just be insane. But
did that even happen during World War II?
What?
Did that even happen during World War II?
Unless I'm retarded to that, I feel like I've never learned this in a history class that we delayed elections because we were at war.
I don't think I've ever heard of that happening either. Yeah.
Then he probably will get a third term. And the last factor.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think they were a little bit fucky, but even during the Civil War, I think we had elections.
That is very important. It's an eschatological factor where if you look at the Epstein files, it's clear that we are run by secret societies. It's clear that the world is run by these individuals who have a lot of power. We don't know who they are, but they control the military. They control the national security apparatus. And these people, there are different names for these people. You can call them the Illuminati. And the Illuminati are composed of three major
groups. Okay? Channel is just insane shit, yeah.
Jesuits who control the Vatican. You have the Septuagint Frankists.
Oh, it's Zirka, the Jesuits.
Which control the modern state of Israel today. And you have the Freemasons, which control the national security apparatus of the United States. And they believe that Israel, this war in the Middle East, is key to the end times in creating heaven on earth. So it's almost like a script that they're following, even though it doesn't make any geopolitical sense. Okay, so I would say that these three are the best reasons why this is happening.
Wow. Well, sir.
The Kushner corruption is true, but it makes no sense at all for Trump to do this for the Saudis, because Saudi is a status quo power that would rather a belligerent Iran than a failed state at their doorstep. I actually don't know if they would prefer one or the other. I guess it would depend on how much of a threat they feel a failed state would represent to them. considering they are separated by at least a little bit of water. I imagine it probably would be worse than Iran, though. Like I said, I'm pretty sure Saudi Arabia and Israel welcome regime change, but they probably don't want like a Syria collapse 2.0. I feel like that would probably not be good for anybody. It wouldn't be good for all of Europe either. But.
Sir, I hope you come back. This was very informative, I think, for both of us. We deeply appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, if you like that video, hit the like button or leave a comment below. It really helps get the
Russia and China didn't help Iran. Why? I feel like I don't know if Russia is even in the even has the capacity to help right now. And I feel like China just doesn't fuck around with like military shit as much. Like they'll send like training advisors or maybe some people or supplies or whatever. But in general, I feel like China's a little bit like military conflict avoidant. Like they don't, that's just not their vibe right now or hasn't been for a while.
I mean, their missile system seems to fucking suck.
Well,
it wasn't very long ago that the Western world was trembling in its boots decades after the Cold War.
Is this guy, is this a Kiwi? What the fuck? Or Australian? These motherfuckers.
You just sound...
All from Ukraine to West Africa to the South China Sea, the US and Europe's longtime adversaries were all preparing for violent days ahead. At the time, they were called the Axis of Upheaval, a four-way alignment between China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea.
Just a bonger? Okay.
Working together at unprecedented scale with America and its entire global alliance in their sights. But spin the clock forward to early March of 2026, and Iran is learning the hard way what the Axis of Upheaval was really worth. Right now, American and Israeli warplanes are laying waste to targets across the country, and growing alignment of European and Middle Eastern powers agree. No matter what happens afterwards, the Iranian regime must go. Flashback to the Axis of Upheaval, and would expect to see a massive coordinated response with one of the world's largest economies in China and one of the world's largest nuclear arsenals in Russia rallying to the Ayatollah's defense. But the Ayatollah's dead. The tides have clearly turned against Iran on the international stage, and in Iran's ultimate moment of need, its allies were nowhere to be found.
Did you see the U.S. consulate shit?
What happened?
In Pakistan? I think there was like 20 people killed because they were like storming the U.S. consulate in Pakistan.
Oh, yeah. That was a couple days ago, right?
Oh, yeah. And apparently those people don't have like a, they don't have a way out right now. Like the Trump administration didn't even think of like having plans to evacuate these people.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll have his own Benghazi hearings for it, right?
Sorry, let's start with the elephant in the room. Global Axis of Upheaval, as described by Western analysts through a fair portion of the mid-2020s, just doesn't exist.
Yeah, most political content on YouTube is so trash, actually depressing. Well, the issue is that people decided that freedom of speech was the best thing ever, and we didn't want to be gatekept by the corrupt elite media anymore, and the billionaires and the corporate lobbyists, so we're going to all do our own media. So now you just have a bunch of retards running around with no background information on literally anything, giving their opinions about everything. And our entire half of our political conversation in the U.S. is informed by whatever Joe Rogan thinks at the time. That's where we're at.
Sooner or later, every nation has to pick a side, and the 2020s have been a grimly educational experience for nations that chose to align themselves with Russia. Not long ago, the nation of Azerbaijan conquered the disputed territory of Nagorno-Karabakh and put an end to its military rivalry with Armenia, paying zero mind to the Russian peacekeepers that Armenia thought it could depend on. At the end of 2024, when Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad stared down the barrel of a rebel offensive, Putin didn't offer Assad military support, but an apartment and a life under the careful watch of Russia.
Hasn't Putin been offering military support to Assad for like a fucking decade? I know it's tapered off recently, but especially in the early parts of that Syrian civil war, there was a lot of Russian shit flying back and forth to help Assad maintain his power. I'm sure at some point they were just exhausted, no? Like between the war in Ukraine now and the futility of the Assad regime, they're just like, fuck it.
Russia.
I'm nitpicking, I guess. Technically what this guy's saying is true, I guess. At the end, they were like, fuck it.
Endless. When in early 2026, longtime partner Nicolas Maduro was spirited.
Joe Rogan. I mean, like, the fact, like, it was already kind of sad enough that, like, that Joe Rogan invited on Andrew Wilson, but the fact that Rachel, his wife, went on? The fuck? Who is like barely literate and wrote a book about how satanic demons take over women and feminists and politics. I don't know what's good, dude. Our world is fucked right now.
An apartment and a life under the careful watch of Russian handlers. When in early 2026, longtime partner Nicolas Maduro was spirited out of Venezuela by American special operators, Russia offered about the weakest condemnations possible and signaled that it would
do
nothing to change
its fate. By the way, U.S. went in there, took a president. Oh, I mean, that's just that.
Even still, there was some reason to believe that Iran might be a special case. After all, this is a nation that's drawn much closer to Russia since its 2022 invasion of Ukraine, when most world nations have done the opposite. Now, just before we move on to China today, we've got to take a moment and highlight the place to go for even more information on the ongoing conflict in the Middle East, as well as
Does
many other conflicts.
Does this war help Ukraine at all?
I mean, like, on in a very, very, very outer perimeter way, maybe a little bit. It's weakening an ally of Russia.
But not like a direct, like... The Shahed drones or whatever aren't getting sent to Russia anymore, and instead Ukraine's having
how many were being? I imagine Russia's probably got a ton of production to make their own now, right? Did he say how many are being
sent?
Own,
I think they had a past contract.
Okay, fuck this guy.